Chapter 9. A computer chattered to itself in alarm as it noticed an airlock open and close itself for no apparent reason. This was because reason was in fact out to lunch. A hole had just appeared in the galaxy. It was exactly a nothingth of a second long, a nothingth of an inch wide, and quite a lot of millions of light-years from end to end. As it closed up, lots of paper hats and party balloons fell out of it and drifted off through the universe. A team of 7 3-foot-high market analysts fell out of it and died, partly of asphyxiation, partly of surprise. 239,000 lightly fried eggs fell out of it too, materializing in a large wobbly heap on the famine-struck land of Pogril in the Panzel system. The whole Pogril tribe had died out from famine, except for one last man who died of cholesterol poisoning some weeks later. The nothingth of a second for which the whole existed reverberated backward and forward through time in a most improbable fashion. Somewhere in the deeply remote past, it seriously traumatized a small random group of atoms drifting through the empty sterility of space and made them cling together in the most extraordinarily unlikely patterns. These patterns quickly learned to copy themselves. This was part of what was so extraordinary about the patterns, and went on to cause massive trouble on every planet they drifted onto. That was how life began in the universe. 5 wild event maelstroms swirled in vicious storms of unreason and spewed up a pavement. On the pavement lay Ford Prefect and Arthur Dent, gulping like half-spent fish.
"There you are,"
gasped Ford, scrabbling for a fingerhold on the pavement as it raced through the third reach of the unknown.
"I told you I'd think of something."
"Oh, sure," said Arthur. "Sure."
"Bright idea of mine," said Ford, "to find a passing spaceship and get rescued by it."
The real universe arched sickeningly away beneath them. Various pretend ones flitted silently by like mountain goats. Primal light exploded, splattering space-time as with gobbets of jello. Time blossomed, matter shrank away. The highest prime number coalesced quietly in a corner and hid itself away forever.
"Oh, come off it," said Arthur. "The chances against it were astronomical."
"Don't knock it. It worked," said Ford.
"What sort of ship are we in?" asked Arthur, as the pit of eternity yawned beneath them.
"I don't know," said Ford. "I haven't opened my eyes yet."
"No, nor have I," said Arthur.
The universe jumped, froze, quivered, and splayed out in several unexpected directions. Arthur and Ford opened their eyes and looked about in considerable surprise.
"Good God," said Arthur. "It looks just like the seafront at Southend."
"Hell, I'm relieved to hear you say that," said Ford.
"Why?"
"Because I thought I must be going mad."
"Perhaps you are. Perhaps you only thought I said it."
Ford thought about this.
"Well, did you say it or didn't you?" he asked.
"I think so," said Arthur.
"Well, perhaps we're both going mad."
"Yes," said Arthur. "We'd be mad, all things considered, to think this was Southend."
"Well, do you think this is Southend?"
"Oh, yes."
"So do I."
"Therefore, we must be mad."
"Nice day for it."
"Yes,"
said a passing maniac.
"Who was that?" asked Arthur.
"Who, the man with the 5 heads and the elderberry bush full of kippers?"
"Yes."
"I don't know, just someone."
"Ah."
They both sat on the pavement,
and watched with a certain unease as huge children bounced heavily along the sand and wild horses thundered through the sky, taking fresh supplies of reinforced railings to the uncertain areas.
"You know," said Arthur with a slight cough, "if this is Southend, there's something very odd about it."
"You mean the way the sea stays steady as a rock and the buildings keep washing up and down?" said Ford.
"Yes, I thought that was odd, too. In fact," he continued, as with a huge bang, Southend split itself into six equal segments, which danced and spun giddily round each other in lewd and licentious formations, "there is something altogether very strange going on. Wild yowling noises of pipes and strings seared through the wind. Hot doughnuts popped out of the road for 10 pence each. Horrid fish stormed out of the sky. And Arthur and Ford decided to make a run for it. They plunged through heavy walls of sound, mountains of archaic thought, valleys of mood music, bad shoe sessions and footling bats, and suddenly heard a girl's voice. It sounded quite a sensible voice, but it just said, 2 to the power of 100,000 to 1 against, and falling. And that was all. Ford skidded down a beam of light and spun round, trying to find a source for the voice, but could see nothing he could seriously believe in.
"What was that voice?" shouted Arthur. "I don't know," yelled Ford. "I don't know. It sounded like a measurement of probability."
"Probability? What do you mean?"
"Probability, you know, like 2 to 1, 3 to 1, 5 to 4 against. It said 2 to the power of 100,000 to 1 against. That's pretty improbable, you know."
A 1,000,000-gallon vat of custard upended itself over them without warning.
"But what does it mean?" cried Arthur. "What, the custard?"
"No, the measurement of improbability."
"I don't know. I don't know at all. I think we're on some kind of spaceship."
"I can only assume," said Arthur, "that this is not the first-class compartment."
Bulges appeared in the fabric of space-time. Great, ugly bulges. said Arthur, as he felt his body softening and bending in unusual directions.
"Southend seems to be melting away. The stars are swirling. A dust bowl. My legs are drifting off into the sunset. My left arm's come off, too."
A frightening thought struck him.
"Hell," he said. "How am I going to operate my digital watch now?"
He wound his eyes desperately around in Ford's direction.
"Ford," he said, "you're turning into a penguin. Stop it."
Again came the voice.
2 to the power of 75,000 to 1 against, and falling.
Ford waddled around his pond in a furious circle.
"Hey, who are you?" he quacked. "Where are you? What's going on? And is there any way of stopping it?"
"Please relax," said the voice pleasantly, like a stewardess in an airliner with only one wing and two engines, one of which is on fire. "You are perfectly safe."
"But that's not the point," raged Ford. "The point is that I am now a perfectly safe penguin, and my colleague here is rapidly running out of limbs."
"It's all right. I've got them back now," said Arthur.
2 to the power of 50,000 to 1 against, and falling," said the voice.
"Admittedly," said Arthur, "they're longer than I usually like them, but..."
"Isn't there anything?" squawked Ford in avian fury. "You feel you ought to be telling us?"
The voice cleared its throat. A giant petit four lolloped off into the distance.
"Welcome," the voice said, "to the starship Heart of Gold."
The voice continued. "Please do not be alarmed," it said, "by anything you see or hear around you. You are bound to feel some initial ill effects, as you have been rescued from certain death at an improbability level of 2 to the power of 276,000 to 1 against, possibly much higher. We are now cruising at a level of 2 to the power of 25,000 to 1 against and falling. And we will be restoring normality just as soon as we are sure what is normal anyway. Thank you. 2 to the power of 20,000 to 1 against and falling. The voice cut out. Ford and Arthur were in a small, luminous, pink cubicle. Ford was wildly excited.
Arthur, he said, this is fantastic. We've been picked up by a ship powered by the infinite improbability drive. This is incredible. I heard rumours about it before. They were all officially denied, but they must have done it. They've built the improbability drive. Arthur, this...
Arthur? What's happening? Arthur had jammed himself against the door to the cubicle, trying to hold it closed, but it was ill-fitting. Tiny, furry little hands were squeezing themselves through the cracks. Their fingers were ink-stained. Tiny voices chattered insanely. Arthur looked up. Ford, he said, there's an infinite number of monkeys outside who want to talk to us about this script for Hamlet they've worked out.